You are listening to Hear Her Sports, a podcast for active, adventurous women who love hearing stories from other active, adventurous women. I am your host, Elizabeth Emery. In every episode, I introduce a female athlete or woman in sport through a conversation about who they are and the terrific work they're doing. Joining me this week is Sevilla Blanc, who just wrapped up her first year in the elite field of World Cup mountain bike racing. Of course, we talk about her racing and training. She even gives an incredible view into the chaos of the starts. Once again, we hear that TV just does not show all the pushing and shoving and simply just the really close quarters the racers must maneuver in. Because starting positions are determined by a year's worth of UCI points, as a first-year elite, Sevilla does not line up near the front. So we hear how preparing for the starts is crucial for her. Like Molly Seidel did in the last episode, Sevilla talks about the importance of rest. Maybe we will all start to listen if we hear it over and over again. Well, maybe. Particularly applicable as we zip our way towards Thanksgiving and then through the rest of the year is what Sevilla has to say about the holidays. We also talk about what's next for her, which mostly involves keeping her Olympic goals in sight. And there's always so much more in every Hear Her Sports episode than what I list in the intro bit, so be prepared for the fun. As a note, Sevilla and I recorded in September, so many of the races she was planning on doing, she's actually already completed. For example, she won Schwamigan 40 in Wisconsin, placed 10th in Big Sugar in Arkansas, and finished up on the second step of the podium at Iceman in Michigan. And now to get going, I'll introduce Sevilla. Sevilla Blanc was raised in Northern California. As the youngest of three, she spent her childhood chasing two older brothers around on rusty hand-me-down bikes. Her love of the outdoors and the adrenaline from physical activity began with her parents providing an early introduction to pure adventure. Of course, strong internal motivation to keep up with her brothers also helped a lot. Sevilla's real bike racing started in high school through the NorCal Nike League. After graduating, she moved to Durango, Colorado for college and to pursue racing at a higher level. Sevilla is a six-time national champion, Pan Am champion, current elite cross-country national champion, and she has achieved two World Cup bronze medals. As successful as she is with all of those and even more incredible results, one of her biggest passions is to be an approachable mentor to kids getting into the sport and to inspire cycling as a lifelong outlet. All of you regular listeners know that it's always particularly fun for me to have cyclists on the show, so I am thrilled that Sevilla has made time to be on Hear Her Sports. Well, welcome, Sevilla. This is great you are here. Thank you. I can't wait to find out more about what you're up to.
Awesome. Yeah, thanks for having me.
So, you know, tell me more, like get us oriented about where you are, where you've been, like what's next. You mentioned that you have a race coming up and, you know, explain to people where you live and how you travel around.
For sure. So yeah, I just finished my World Cup season a couple weekends ago. We had World Cup finals in Val di Sole, Italy. And now, I mean, my focus is the World Cups. We were over there for World Champs in France and then the World Cup in Italy. But now I'm kind of switching gears. I have a few more races this year. It's already mid-September, but I have, Schwamigan 40 this weekend, which is part of the Lifetime Grand Prix. My boyfriend, Cole, we both race together. He's racing in the Grand Prix right now, so it's a big focus for him, but I get to kind of join him now, and we go to races together, so it's really fun. And so I'll be racing Schwamigan, and then next we'll do Big Sugar Gravel in October, which is in Bentonville, and then we'll finish it off with Iceman in November. It's kind of like three races, but spread out over a couple months. They're just fun races for me to just reconnect with the cycling community in the U.S. Like being over in Europe, you know, it's just a different kind of atmosphere. And these next races where the pressure is a lot less, and I get to just really enjoy the community here and be there for everybody. So I'm really excited about it. It's been a while since I've raced back in the U.S., so I'm really excited.
How are you going to adjust to the longer racing? Because these are longer, aren't they?
Yeah. So, well, Schwamigan is like I think it's going to be about a 2-hour race. So
Okay.
it's not crazy. And I think like my XC Fitness will transfer over pretty well. But yeah, for a race like Big Sugar later this year, that's going to be, I'm not really sure how that's going to go, but I think we'll change training a little bit, like do some more longer endurance rides and kind of build that endurance up. But yeah, I mean, it's just, you know, the gravel scene it's so much for everyone. So I'm really just excited to be out there and just go through the adventure with everyone else and just take on whatever comes my way. So yeah.
Talk a little bit about your European season this year, because I hadn't realized that this was your first elite level year. So what was that like, and how was it transitioning into the upper group?
So this is my first year elite, and it's a little bit different in the US because usually they combine the U23 and the elite, so we all race together. But in the World Cups, it's different, it's separated. So this was my first year racing with the top of the top over in Europe, which was pretty crazy because I'm like competing against my idols of the sport, you know. For me, it started in Albstadt, Germany, actually in May. So I didn't go to the first World Cup in Brazil. I did Albstadt and Novo Mesto, and we kind of took a little bit of a conservative approach to this year as my first year elite, and our goals are in the next couple years. So I didn't race all the World Cups and kind of balanced it a little bit more with some races in the U.S. So Albstadt, Novo Mesto, and then I raced Lenzerheide World Cup and Snowshoe here in the U.S., and then Leger World Champs, and then Val d'Isol. So yeah, a little bit fewer races, but gosh, each one is so jam-packed, and you just learn so much racing at that level. But yeah, I would say, first of all, like the race is longer, so the race in the elite category is like an hour and a half usually, and U23s, our races were like around more like an hour five or so. So that's one difference. And then also just the competition. I mean, you're throughout the hour and a half race, you are always battling within seconds of your competitors, and you finish and maybe you're sprinting. You have a sprint finish for 25th or something, but you're surrounded by like four other people. So you're constantly battling for position all the way down to the line. And I kind of remember, at least for me in U23, like there would be just a little bit bigger gaps, and maybe you'd be kind of racing by yourself for a little bit. But that just, yeah, that doesn't happen at the elites. And yeah, it's just more, just a higher level, more action, I guess.
Sure.
And for me, like one of the coolest things and most memorable parts was I've been kind of just out of the top 40, so I wasn't able to race short track at the first few World Cups, but finally made it into that top 40 for Snowshoe and Val d'Isol. And just having that opportunity was a huge game changer for me, because I've been starting at the back because of my UCI point ranking. So that is just a huge added challenge really at the start, to be like, you know, sixth row and trying to kind of navigate that whole chaos. Being able to race the short track is not only super fun event, but you get to compete for a better start position on Sunday. So that's been a big thing in these last couple races for me, to be able to kind of work my way up to have a better start.
Can you explain more about the chaos? You know, like what actually is going on, and you know, like what's your experience moving from the back?
Yeah, gosh. I mean, I think that starting in the back is, mainly it's just really stressful because before the race, you know that you're going to line up sixth, seventh row. You probably don't have a choice between left or right side. You just roll up and go wherever. You're surrounded by like handlebars and people budging and like trying to kind of push up before the gun even goes off. People are kind of like moving and pushing and shoving, kind of trying to get forward. And yeah, and then when the race starts, it's just like, it's just about reacting to anything around you, trying to stay calm and avoid overlapping wheels and any crashes. And ideally, I always like to start on the edge, so I have at least an opening. But yeah, I mean, it does not always work that way. So yeah, I think that the hardest part is like just the stress and then burning all those matches in the first like 2 or 3 minutes of the race to try to move up and get yourself into a good position before like the course narrows and the leaders are really like gone, you know?
Right. I think it's hard to tell about the start, you know, watching on TV because, you know, of course the cameras are, you know, focused on the front. And so often we don't see what is going on in the back and all the difficulty back there.
Yeah, for sure. You really don't see much on TV of the chaos. It's pretty crazy. I watched one of the starts from Worlds back, and I just remember that moment, you know, of like trying to find my way through the race. But then the way they show it on TV, it's like, oh, like it doesn't look, it looks so calm on TV almost, you know, right. Compared to what I experienced. But
do you train for that start?
Well, yeah. So this year, actually, that's been a big focus of my training is like working on the acceleration and my kind of start sprint. So we've really focused on that. But I mean, it's really hard to train kind of that battling for position. That's something that you really only get to experience in a race. And that's a big element of it as well. Not just, you know, the power you're able to accelerate with, but really navigating around all the people.
Sure, and having the, I don't know, the chutzpah, I guess, to go through.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. And how did Worlds go?
It went good. You know, I went over to Europe a week early to race this Basel Swiss Cup as like a warm-up race. But yeah, unfortunately, I got like a stomach bug the second night I got to Europe. So actually, like the first 5 days, I was really sick. And the lead up to the trip had gone so good. Like my training was really going good and I had a lot of confidence. So when I got sick, it really made me have to kind of reassess my expectations and kind of decide how I wanted to represent myself. And that was different than what I had traveled to Europe with in mind, you know. I was pretty sick and I didn't have an appetite or like wasn't eating, which was the weirdest thing for me as like an athlete. You're like, what is this? But I wasn't really feeling normal until like 2 days before short track. So that was Friday. And yeah, we were kind of going at a short track, like, all right, this is just, you know, to blow out the system, no expectations here. Like you've been sick all week, just go as hard as you can and really try to open up the system. So that's what I did. And it went well, actually. I was 10th. I dropped a chain on the last lap when I was battling for, I think, top 7. So that was a bit of a bummer, but I still finished 10th. And that was my second like World Cup level short track. So learned a lot there. But the unique thing about Worlds is that they don't actually take the call up from short track for XC because it's just a different event. And it's world champs. So the call up for the XC is based off of UCI points again. So that's why on Sunday I was, I think 40th and I lined up 6th row, I think. So it was kind of the same thing, but yeah, I was able to like have a good start, navigate through everything, avoid crashes, which to me, that means a good start if you avoid any crashes in that kind of situation. And then, yeah, just worked my way up and I felt really good that day. I think, you know, I was over my sickness and I was rested, which was, you know, worked to my benefit. In the end, I was 13th at Worlds and really proud of that race because I think as an athlete, like it's really hard to adjust your expectations when you get sick or something happens. So for me, to be able to come back and have a race that I was really proud of. And Worlds was a really big goal for our whole season. So to be able to come and have a performance that I was proud of, was I was really happy about that.
It's also hard to, you know, prepare for a single day event and, you know, be ready for that event. And you mentioned how you got sick and, you know, that throws wrenches into the system right away.
Absolutely. Yeah. Because, I mean, you only have one shot at this thing. Like, you have one day that you have to be primed for, you know. That makes it even harder if things don't go great or you don't feel well, because it's like, really? Like, my off day had to be this day? Right. But yeah, but no, I mean, I think we handled it the best I could and got the most out of it I could, but something was going around. So everyone was dealing with like a stomach bug kind of thing. And that's just the sport, you know, it happens. So yeah, you just have to kind of navigate it in the most positive, best way you can, because you're never dealt the perfect hand of cards.
Sure. Are you good at nerves or controlling nerves or using those or whatever you would do?
Yeah, you know, I think it's a funny question. Like, people ask that a lot. And I guess that it's just kind of something that's always there for me. It's not like I'm really nervous or I'm not nervous at all. It's just like kind of always in the background. For Worlds, actually, it was funny. And I think because I didn't really have expectations, I really wasn't. I think it was the night before short track, I was like not nervous at all. I was like so chill, not even really thinking about the race. And then I think the race day, like, that's when it always comes. And for me, I'm always really excited about the race, but I've been trying to kind of like dampen that until race day and really kind of like save your excitement, because excitement is energy, you know, and really save it till like the day or the hours before the race, when like then you can really turn it on and get in the zone. But yeah, for nerves are definitely always there, kind of in the back. But yeah, I think the more that you race, and also the fact about racing short track is really nice, because it kind of gives you like a practice round in a way. Like on Friday afternoon, everybody's pretty chill, like there to have a really good time and just get a really good opener. And then on Sunday, you're like, oh, this is easy. Like, I did this 2 days ago, you know, so you have a little bit more, it's fresh in your mind.
It sounds like you like to compete.
I do. Yeah, I do.
Not everybody does.
I also really like to train. Mm. But gosh, yeah, I really love to compete. And especially on the World Cup circuit, there's so much action and you're learning so much. And it's just really, really exciting to be in that environment. And it's a good place to learn and grow as an athlete.
So what did you learn this year, and what are you going to focus on over the off season?
Good question.
I'm not in off season mode yet.
I know. I'm still like, I had last week to kind of decompress and like reset a little bit, but I'm like, gosh, yeah, now I really do need to reflect on the season and think about what we should work on. But yeah, I mean, I think that the biggest thing was just gaining experience. And like I said, I didn't race every World Cup, so I was able to go into every World Cup like pretty fresh and really ready to kind of absorb all the everything from the race, the experience, then fitness wise, and then really kind of reflect on it. So I think that we really learned a lot with like the starts. And as I said, that was something that we were really focusing on in my training as well. But yeah, I mean, I think for me, like having some good starts this year and knowing that like I can be up there, but then just holding it, you know, that's the next challenge, is being able to stay up there. So there's a lot to work on in the next few months, but hopefully I'll remember that. That's the hardest thing also about like the end of the season and off season, is like I've ended the season really on a good note and motivated, and also a little bit unfulfilled, and like knowing that I want a little bit more. I'm just trying to remember that feeling for next year, you know? So like remembering that feeling in 6 months and just trying to get right back there is always the challenge after off season.
I would think that a big part of mountain biking, and I have not raced mountain bikes, but I would think that a big part of mountain biking would be staying technically proficient even at the end of the race when you're fatigued.
Yeah. Yeah, that's definitely a big part of it. And I try to stay on my mountain bike as much as possible, like throughout the winter and during base season to really keep the skills up, because yeah, that's definitely something that you lose a little bit of, or not really lose, but like I said, a big part of the racing is like that bar to bar battling with the other riders. So that's not something that you really get in the winter. Yeah, I try to just train. I mean, I train 100% on my mountain bike, actually. So over the winter months, I'll just be trying to ride trail as much as I can. And yeah, it's also a really good time to focus on those like specific technical aspects like jumping or, you know, wet routes or something like that. You really have a lot more time to kind of focus and maybe travel to an area that you can really focus on that.
How was your technical skills compared to the rest of the field?
Yeah, it's always been something that I really enjoy. The courses that are more technical are usually suit me better. From a young age, I started riding with my brothers. I started like following them. We used to always be really into like building jumps in our backyard, and we had this pump track that we'd built with my dad over the years, and just kind of like seeking that adrenaline rush with them. So maybe that's kind of where I kind of learned how to turn my fear off a little bit, but yeah, if that makes sense. I don't know. I really do love technical races, and for me, I think they do suit me a little bit better. But yeah, I mean, it's always something that I'm working on, and yeah, when we're throwing races like Snowshoe World Cup this year, where it just starts downpouring mid-race, and you really have to like go from riding dry rock gardens and dry steep route descents to super wet, super slick route descents and rock gardens where everybody is just like all over the place. That is something that, yeah, you can always get better at that, being able to switch that and really be able to ride that well. So there's always ways to improve. And I think that's one of the biggest reasons that I love this sport so much, is that there's so much to always improve.
I love that you are here listening to another terrific sporty woman tell her story. Following women's sports is a form of activism. Watching women's sports, talking about it, and supporting it are all forms of activism. As Kelly Ervick said in episode 132, women artists and women athletes have faced the exact same challenges over centuries. All women have faced the same challenges. So the stories you are listening to on Hear Her Sports are the same ones being told by women in the arts, in business, in politics, or wherever. I encourage you to continue listening to Hear Her Sports and tell your friends about it. Because we are a listener-supported show, we always appreciate when you give back through Patreon or Buy Me a Coffee, which is way easier to use. Find us at patreon.com/hearher or buymeacoffee.com/hearher.
Sports stars. They're like superheroes.
But they're actually real.
Which is why we've made a podcast about them. You see,
they've all got a story.
But too many of these stories were cut short.
Kobe Bryant.
Payne Stewart.
Flo Jo.
Phil Hughes.
Justin Fashanu.
We're writing episodes about all of them.
And sadly, many more.
Death of a Sports Star. A new series from Crowd Network.
You mentioned on your website that growing up where you did in Inverness, California, that you learned the importance of understanding where you came from, your surroundings, and how to have power to change your environment for the better. Can you explain that a little bit?
I grew up in a really rural place. Like, we did not have neighbors. We're surrounded by forest. And I was actually homeschooled with my two older brothers for most of my childhood. And yeah, we just really spent a lot of time outside, like learning from the land and our environments, and really connected closely to nature. So as I go out, like now go to college, and I see a lot of the world through racing, like, yeah, I'm able to just really kind of reflect on the different environments and really appreciate them for what they are. So I think it really gave me a deep understanding of my environment and the ones that I am able to, I have the privilege of visiting. We all have an impact on where we are and where we travel, and just trying to have the best, lightest impact that we can is something that I think we should all be aware of.
Are you still traveling in the van?
Yes. So
cool.
Cole, my boyfriend, he races mostly domestically. So when I'm overseas, he's kind of batching it in the van. And so now I've kind of joined him. So we're actually in it right now. We'll fly out tomorrow to Schwamigan. Yeah, it's kind of our little home on wheels. It's a pretty cozy little thing and a really good tool for us to be able to like train and travel to different training grounds throughout the winter. So we both went to college in Durango, where in the winter you get a lot of snow. So it was really a good tool for us when we were in school to be able to go to drier places or more technical terrain and really keep those skills up and be able to train in just varied environments.
So you were living in the van when you were going to school?
Oh, no, sorry. We were living in an apartment,
but
we have the van and we were kind of using it part-time for like weekend or little training camps.
Right. So this winter, so you'll be based in Durango in an apartment, but you'll again use the van to go to other places when the weather is not good in Durango for your training.
So it's a little bit complicated, but my boyfriend and I were both out of school. So we're in Durango for most of the summer, usually kind of basing out of there, doing some altitude training. And then I grew up in Northern California. So in December, we'll go there and do some training camps there where the weather's a lot better. Last year, we actually went to Girona, Spain for January and February to really focus and do a really good training block there. Our coach is actually, he lives in Girona, so it was a really good location for us to be. For me, there's a lot of UCI races happening early season around that area, so I was able to kind of do a really good training block and then hit some early season UCI races where you're not traveling a ton, you know, they're pretty close. So yeah, we hope to do that again, but we'll see.
I think it's hard for people to understand sort of the lifestyle of a bike racer like you. You know, not really having a solid place where you're living most of the year.
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of crazy for me too, because it's so normal. And then I get to points and I'm like, wow, I haven't unpacked my suitcase in I don't know how long, you know. It was really nice this summer. I was able to really kind of be in Durango in one place for a couple months. But yeah, since then, I'm really living out of a suitcase for the majority of the year. So it becomes pretty normal to me. For other people, it's definitely not normal.
Do you like it? And is there anything that you miss?
Yeah, no, I mean, I love it. Like, I think you have to love it to dedicate your life to it. But for sure, like, it does get old for sure. And I think I miss mostly sometimes just like being in one place and having like, I love to cook. So having like my kitchen and just being able to just, yeah, be in your home, in your own bed and everything. I think that's something everybody would miss. So
how do you cook in the van?
Yeah. So we actually just renovated it last winter and we put like a stove inside. Before, we just had like this little camp stove that we'd use outside, but now there's like a little two burner stove inside, and it's super easy to use, and you can get like one or two pots on there pretty good. So it's pretty simple.
And do you have a refrigerator? And I just imagine two cyclists training all the time always requires a ton of food. So like, how are you storing all that stuff and, you know, making meals big enough?
Oh yes. Yeah. That was like the focus of the renovation. Because also, if you know, my boyfriend, he He's not the average eater. He eats a lot. And we both eat a lot. We're racing and training. So we actually upgraded the fridge as well. And it's big. Like, I'm always really surprised. It's kind of like a mini fridge size, but I'm always surprised how much fits in there. So that was a big focus, is like, we need to have a lot of space in the fridge to be able to have like multiple days of food. So yeah, that's in there. And we're pretty much able to like go to the grocery store and like get a good week's worth of food in there. So
oh, that's good.
Yeah. Yeah. It's pretty ideal. And that was really important for us.
Well, what's a typical meal that you'll make?
Gosh, we really do so much, but we have a rice cooker, which makes it super easy. Like, plug that in, make a pot of rice, and then I don't know, different stuff. Like, I love doing chicken and veggies. We'll do like stir fries, yeah, spaghetti. We do a lot of pastas, I guess. I'm always like really interested in different recipes and trying different things. And my parents are really good cooks. And growing up, like, we had a big garden. We ate a lot off of like the land that we lived on. So yeah, I mean, they're not like chefs or anything, or they don't have any background in that, but they were just such good cooks. And so, yeah, I just learned a lot from them and kind of adopted that love of being in the kitchen from them. So it's just something I really like to do, just experiment and just try different stuff.
I want to talk a little bit about your early bike riding, because you did race, as you said, in high school in the NYCHA League. Sort of explain what that is and what you got from that.
I went to high school at actually an all-girls high school. And my freshman year, we started the first all-girls high school mountain bike team in the nation at the time. So it was pretty cool to be a part of, and it was a small team we had, but it enabled the high school to compete in the NYCHA League, which was very healthy in our area. So I got kind of my start in racing in the NorCal NYCHA League. So it was a really cool experience. I mean, we were racing every other weekend in the spring and competing against other girls. So that's when I was like just kind of realizing that, like, whoa, other girls do this, and like there's all this competition element to it, and it's not just about like riding your bike on the mountains behind your brothers. So that was really cool. And yeah, I mean, now I think that NYCHA has grown so much, and that's something that's really cool for me to see, is like when I was a freshman in high school, I think there were like 14 girls in my category maybe. And now I think you show up to one of those races and there's more than 60. Like, it's crazy how much it's grown. So that is really cool and really exciting to see.
I would have loved to do mountain biking in high school. I think it's amazing that there are mountain biking teams. Certainly wasn't happening when I was younger.
Yeah, no, it's really awesome, and it's such a good thing. And we were, it's just a really cool thing to be able to go out and, you know, the after school practices. I remember we would like see the cross country running team when we were going out on our rides, and I think they were all kind of jealous of us.
You've mentioned that giving back to young girls and young athletes in general is really important. And you have a lot of pictures of yourself, you know, doing autographs and whatnot on Instagram. You know, I think that's great.
Yeah. It is something that's really important to me because, like growing up, I lived in a rural town and, you know, I followed the pros racing and stuff, but I never really knew anybody. And at the races, it was so intimidating to like think about going up and talking to any one of them or asking them questions. And there I was as a young girl, shy, you know, but really into this sport and motivated and like inspired by these older people, but kind of scared to like go out and ask them questions or like, how do you do this? Like, how do you get there? So for me now, like, that's really my goal, is to be somebody that is approachable and that young kids aren't afraid to come up to, you know, and ask questions and learn from, because yeah, I mean, I'm at the beginning of my career, but yeah, I want to be as much help to the younger generation as I can.
How do you manage that during race days or race weekends when, you know, you obviously have your own goals? You know, like, is it easy to interact with the viewers?
Yeah, you know, it's something that actually really, really fuels me. Like, as I said, I'm really excited to go back and to Schwam again and race in the U.S. and see everybody. I think it's really exciting. It's kind of like a family reunion in a way sometimes. And for sure, like, it's overwhelming at times, but I think that people are really respectful too of, like, race day is kind of when you're focusing, and it's nice to be able to kind of get to the events a few days early, and we do some community stuff in the days leading up to the race. So that's when I'm really able to kind of connect with the community and not be, like, distracted by your race, you know?
So I'm not exactly sure how to ask this question, but, you know, like, you're a first year elite, you've had incredible success as a U23, as a junior, and even in this first year, you've had incredible success, I would say. Like, where do you feel like you are in your career? You know, like, put it in a context of sort of like looking back, like, what are you going to focus on? What are you interested in doing long term? That kind of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy. I think that the last few years have kind of blended together. And now I'm at the end of my first year elite. And I think that I've learned so much this year. And I think that for me, the big focus is on 2024 and the Paris Olympics. So that will be, like, the focus moving forward. And it's coming right up. I mean, next year is already 2023. So I think it'll all kind of come at me really quick. But that's kind of how it all goes. Like, it's just crazy how quickly these seasons go by, and, like, boom, now we're at the end of it. So fitness wise, like, there's always so much to improve. Mental, like, you know, there's always ways to grow there. For me, for sure, the next couple years, it's a big focus on the Olympics, and then hopefully another Olympic cycle. But yeah, I mean, it's also so cool to see so much growth in the U.S. in the cycling world. So I really love to come back and do these races back here. And, you know, I'm not focused on the Grand Prix or really gravel, but it's really fun for me to kind of dip my toes in some of those events and just connect with that world and those communities. It's really, really fun to be a part of that in a small way.
Let's talk a little bit about the Olympics. So it's 2024, and as you mentioned, it's going to be here before you know it. Like, is 2023 a qualification year? Are you going to be having races where you're really going to have to be performing specifically for one event?
Yeah. Pretty much all of 2023, the whole World Cup season, is going to be really important. And especially World Champs next year is a big qualification event. So yeah, next year is kind of a big year, but I think that I'm at a good point, just really, really motivated and feeling pretty fresh at the end of the season, which is a good thing. I think that was kind of the goal for me, not to be, like, finishing the season and be totally burnt out and, like, tired and done. So yeah, I think we're at a good point, and we have a lot of work to do for sure. But yeah, a good winter and a few months ahead of us. So
you said you have a coach. So how do you work with him? I think I read that he was a he. How do you work with him, and how does, like, what information does he give you, and what kind of decisions are you making for yourself, and who does sort of the, you know, long-term planning, thinking about the Olympics?
Yeah, so he really does, you know, together we've kind of planned out my goals for the next few years and made sure that we're both on the same page about that. He is based over in Girona, but we communicate daily, so the communication is really good. And I think that's super key with any relationship with your coach, is just really being able to talk to them about anything, because, you know, your training is such a big part of your life, and it's important to kind of take in all aspects of your life, you know, all stresses, if you're in school or not, really try to find that training life balance, which I think is something that is super important, especially for longevity in the sport and just having fun with it still. We work together, really. We communicate a lot, and yeah, it's working out.
You talked about bike racing balance with life. I mean, how are you doing that? I think that's hard.
Yeah, no, it is hard. But I guess what I mean is, like, balance in the small ways. Like, I remember when I was in school, in high school and in college, like, I mean, you're so dedicated. Like, if you're an athlete, if you're racing bikes, like, you're motivated, you're dedicated. But finding that balance of, like, what is too much, like, what is too type A, and what is a good time to just, like, maybe it's okay if you don't ride that 30 extra minutes to complete your workout, and you go home and you take a nap if you're, like, exhausted from your school day or whatever, because in the long run, it's not gonna, that's not gonna be the difference between winning your race, and maybe you're gonna be happier and healthier in the long run. So that's something that I've definitely had to learn, because I'm definitely more of, like, a type A athlete, and I used to be so, like, I have to do this and this and this, and it has to be perfect. But I think that as I've gotten older, it's also, like, I've realized that, like, that's not going to be the difference between winning and losing, and you're going to be way happier and healthier in your day to day. So that's what's more important by far.
Well, I'm laughing because I have a coach, and, you know, if it's on the piece of paper, if it's on the schedule, it really takes a lot of my mental energy to not do it, even if I'm not going good.
Yeah, totally. And I'm the same way. But yeah, I think one of the things that I've really learned with my coach is that things change day to day. And sometimes we don't even put anything in the schedule if I'm, like, feeling tired, because we'll just talk about it that morning and see how I'm feeling, like, see how I slept. Like, another thing that is super nice is around holidays and stuff, like, he'll really take into account that, you know, that's family time. Like, what do you really want to be doing around Christmas? Do you want to be doing, like, a 5-hour ride every day, or enjoying that, like, special time with your parents that you don't get to have all year round? So that's kind of, like, the life training balance that I'm talking about that is really important and overlooked a lot with athletes, because I think that, you know, everybody's like, oh, I have to train through this, you know, I have to push through this and just get it done. But yeah, it's important to think about the other aspects of your life and really find that sustainable balance.
I would expect it's great that you have your boyfriend right there. You said that you were now doing a lot of racing in Europe, and he's not doing that. He's focusing on the Grand Prix. But still, I mean, he understands what you're doing. He understands, you know, how hard it is, and is training in a very similar way.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I mean, we spend a lot of time apart, especially this year, because, yeah, I'm over in Europe and he's not there. But it is for sure super nice for me to have that person that just gets it in all aspects of that word. Like, he really understands the stress and what just everything that goes into being a bike racer, because he's doing the exact same thing. And yeah, for sure, like, for some people, it doesn't work to have somebody like that. But for us, it does. And we actually have the same coach. And again, sometimes that also doesn't work. But for us, I think, like, we can just be honest with our coach and be like, you know, our training is super different. He's focused on, I mean, just because he's also a different physiology than I am, he's focused on endurance racing, and I'm more doing shorter, kind of more high intensity stuff. So it's super different. But when we can, like, our coach will have us ride together on, like, an easy day. And that's usually super nice. And if it's not, we'll just be like, I don't want to, like, make us have different training plans today. Like, we need to go do something different. And we could just, like, be honest in that way. So it's super nice. And yeah, it works out. It's definitely super nice to come back and, yeah, just have somebody who gets it all the time. So yeah, it's pretty special.
You talked a little bit about off season. Is that a big part of your sort of, you know, regular life bike racing balance? You know, you use that as time for refreshing. Like, how will you use your off season, both mentally and physically?
Yeah, I mean, for now, I have a couple more months where I'm still training for these races, but there's a lot less pressure. So I think for me, my goal is to really try to relax in these next few months and just not feel succumbed by the pressure, which is going to be a challenge because I think naturally I am competitive and I want to be really good for these races. But I also know that it's like, it's not the focus right now. And you have to allow your brain really to like have that downtime. And then when the season's over, I'll take a couple weeks like completely off. And yeah, I really try to just really take that off and do stuff that I would never do before, but also like do nothing. I think that sometimes people are like, yeah, I'm going to do all these different, like all this different stuff in my off season and really challenge my body in different ways. But what I've really learned is that sometimes that's just literally doing nothing because we never allow our bodies to do that. That's what you really need to be able to build back to a higher peak. And it's definitely hard because it usually comes, you know, you're racing, and then it's over. And there's kind of this lull, and it's a transition period to kind of turn your brain, turn your body off. Usually I actually feel really bad for like a week or so if I'm not training, but it's like what your body really needs. So it's a challenge, but it's necessary.
You mentioned liking food and liking to cook and all of that. Is nutrition super important? I mean, do you know a lot about nutrition? Do you focus on that?
Yeah, I think that, I didn't study it, but as I said, like, it's a natural kind of passion of mine. And yeah, I mean, as an athlete, for sure, like, we really care about what we put in our bodies. So I'm always interested in like learning new, like, nutrition facts or like what nutrients or fibers are like better for you or stuff like that. But yeah, really just experimenting with recipes. And I mean, I don't really have or live with any restrictions. I just really love playing in the kitchen. And it's a really important part of being an athlete is fueling yourself well. So it's kind of fun for me to take that really seriously and have fun with it.
Do you have any tips for fueling on the bike?
I would say eat often. And I think for fueling on the bike, like it's really important to eat throughout the ride. You have to sustain those energy levels to be performing well, but also to keep having fun. I mean, it depends like what your goals are on the bike, but if you're just using it as kind of a lifestyle activity, I think it's still important to eat on the bike. And I don't know why you wouldn't want to. for me, like, gosh, yeah, I eat all kinds of like ride food, you know, prepackaged stuff. But yeah, I also really love like we've been really into making rice cakes this year. So
nice.
Putting different stuff in there. Like we'll do one with like, I've done one with jam. Like you just make rice and then just put any kind of your favorite jam in it. It's pretty good. Always add a little bit of salt. I love salt. And then we make one with like bacon. It's like a bacon maple kind of. So They're just like super easy to make. And it's a nice way to fuel those longer endurance rides.
I have trouble getting them to stick together. I ended up like with a tin foil of a lot of mush.
Yeah. I have that struggle too. But yeah, I think it's like about having the rice be like wet enough, I've found, is the key.
Got it. Well, thank you. This was amazing. And I'm super excited about your next races and also about next season to follow you. It's very exciting.
Thank you. Yeah, that was a really nice conversation.
And that is it for another great episode. Thank you to Sevilla for being on Hear Her Sports. And a heartfelt thank you to all of our special Patreon and Buy Me a Coffee supporters for their continued backing of the show. I'm so grateful that each one of them took the time to express their appreciation for the podcast by signing up as a patron or by sending me a virtual coffee. It means a lot because Hear Her Sports is a listener-supported show, and we couldn't do it without you. If you are not a supporter and would like to be, go to patreon.com/hearher or to the easy-to-use buymeacoffee.com/hearher. Visit the show notes page at hearhersports.com for links to what we talked about in the episode, including some of the races Sevilla has done, and to the feed. You can always connect with me in an email to elizabeth@hearhersports.com. You know I love talking about women's sports, so I look forward to hearing from you. We are on all the socials at Hear Her Sports. Be sure to sign up for our newsletter at hearhersports.com. Until next time, bye-bye.
Awesome.
Hey there, my name is Michael Laminato, and this is Pit Pass F1, a brand new podcast that'll take you closer to the action of the world's most prestigious motorsport. From Monaco to Miami and Australia to Azerbaijan, Pit Pass F1 is on the ground and has you covered. Esteemed F1 journalists Julianne Serasoli and Chris Medland will take you inside the sport every round. They'll keep you up to date with the latest news breaking in Formula One and the most influential views shaping the world of Grand Prix racing. Every Friday, we'll be bringing you a track guide and race preview, and Chris and Drew will be in your feed every morning from Saturday through to Monday to keep you up to date on all the day's action on and off the track. So if you want to be in the know on the latest in Formula One, subscribe wherever you get your favourite podcasts and visit us at evergreenpodcasts.com. Pit Pass F1, a brand new show for Evergreen Podcasts.